Accession number 19533, Reel 4.
You're talking about the Dutch guilders?
Being a Dutch possession, that we could use our money there, so they issued us with Dutch guilders, all for free. So, which, you know, we could use around the shops or barter for anything. Everything else, that cigarettes, we got issued free, and sweets, chocolates, beer, we got issued for free. So we were on quite a good time there in Java.
But weren't the guilders deducted from your pay?
No, we couldn't do that, evidently. Why? I don't know, didn't argue, didn't ask them why. But we knew we weren't. It didn't go against our pay.
Well, did you take an interest in the political situation?
Not really, no.
So what happened to you after Java?
So we went then from Java, we went back to Singapore. And we stayed in Singapore for a short while. And we used to get out quite a lot into the mountains where the reservoirs were. I used to swim quite a lot up there, so it was quite good. And we used to get out into Singapore itself. Singapore itself was thriving. We could go into restaurants for meals. My first introduction to curry was out there, and used to really enjoy ourselves in Singapore.
What was the attitude of the population?
All right, very good it was, that I got friendly with a Chinese girl there, Eurasian she was. Her father had most of the silk shops in Singapore itself, and I went to a sister's wedding out there, and they made me most welcome. The Chinese, and Rosie, her name was, and anyhow, when I came back to England, I said I'd write, but I never did. You meet other people, and I probably could have been owned most of the silk shops in Singapore.
How did you come to meet her?
Dancing, you see, in Singapore itself, they've got the New World, the Great World, and the Happy World. Mostly anybody who was there during wartime will know those three places. And it was like a fairground, more or less. There was all kind of boxing on. And we used to do quite a lot of... one of our sports was milling in the para regiment. 3 one-minute rounds you used to do. You used to go in and anything, except kicking. So you just win and have a bash at each other. So just for three 1 minutes, and that would more like an hour, but it was only 1 minute. So in Singapore, they used to do that a lot in there. People used to go and watch them doing it, and they used to pay us $5 if we went in and doing so. 6 o'clock every night, you used to go to this particular booth in the Happy World, and they get the Chinese guy there to come and pick about a dozen of you. You know, you, okay, yeah. $5, give you $5, and off you waited. You waited, and then you just used to pick them different weights, you see, and you'd be waiting there, five on one side, you see, and they so-and-so, Ron Dixon, 12 battalion, you know, against so-and-so, 7 battalion, used to go in and have a slug at each other. Well, it was worth it for $5.
Could you do head-butting?
No, it was only a face. Oh, yeah, you had boxing gloves on. Oh, no, you went in with boxing gloves and you just slam at each other. We used to do that quite a lot, especially on the ships coming over.
So this was for the entertainment?
Yes, for the entertainment of the...
civilians?
The civilians, you see. Yeah. So after the after the milling, I used to go dancing, and it was quite good for dancing. And you used to be able to buy a book of tickets with all hostesses there, beautiful Chinese hostesses. And you couldn't go and ask somebody to dance, unless it was a British girl or something like that. But you couldn't ask them to dance, you had to pay for their dances. It wasn't a lot, probably a couple of dollars by your five tickets. So I got with this hostess, and she was quite a good dancer. And I used to think myself a good dancer in those days. And so I said, you know, can I book you for the night, something like that, for dancing? She said, well, no, but you can, nothing stopping you from buying books of tickets, you see. So, which I did do, you see. So it was more or less with the books of tickets that I first. And of course, then it developed from then that I used to take her elsewhere dancing. And then she took me home to her family. And I don't know what she thought my intentions were of marriage or anything like that, you see. But no way would they let you. My battalion commander wouldn't allow me to do anything like that, marry anybody like that. But because they take away just a friend. And of course, really, I suppose that's all it was. It was a friend. It was a woman to have out there, you know, nice, to be able to dance with and socialise with, you see. But that's all it amounted to, you know, that no sex or anything like that. It was just dancing. And
why did the commanding officer adopt that attitude?
Oh, well, it was like that with everybody, you know. You didn't stand a chance of, you know, anybody, you know, having back to England or something like that.
Did you have to get his permission to marry?
Because, I suppose, really, if you... I'm almost sure, I don't know where it happened, you know, or if it happened to anybody. But I wouldn't have thought that they'd have allowed you to marry out there. You'd have to go back to England and then send for them, something like that. I think that was the attitude. It was different after the war. Well, you know, long time, few years after the war for anybody, because anybody who went out to Singapore, you know, in the 50s or something like that, and I think they met women and married them.
But you were over 21.
I was, yeah.
So yeah. You were an adult.
I was an adult. But they would have put obstacles in one's way, I think, that... I didn't try it, you see. I didn't ask for, and I don't think for one moment that I wanted to, you see, that I was quite... Oh, so, you see, what really stopped it was that playing football and on the ground outside Changi Jail, I broke my leg, you see, that... So I fractured my fibula, that, you know, and it was quite... Doing so, I'm in hospital with a plastered leg, and I can remember one night my mates had come round to the hospital and said, "Are you coming out?" So we said, "We've got a galley waiting for you, you know, we're going to town." So I said, "Well, I haven't been." So I said, "Right." So off I went, hobbling along with a pot leg, left leg, and into Singapore, you know, and we had quite a good time, and it got to midnight, and I thought, I got a taxi back, and I thought, oh, I'm going to get back at the hospital with a little reception area there, with a corporal on duty, you know, seeing that nobody went down, nobody came in. And I thought, how am I going to get past him? So I went on my hands and knees with my pot leg and crawled to my, past him, and to my ward, you see. And I got to my bed, and under the mosquito net, and all my clothes on, and got into bed. And a few minutes later, all the lights went on in the ward. all the lights went on, and God, he came down looking, and he came down to my bed and whipped me doings off and says, what's this, you've just come in? I said, that's right, yeah. So where have you been? Where have you been? And he's not reported out. I said, I've been into Singapore. Where have I been? I thought, you know, I'm not going to tell me that, you know, what's happening and all that. I'm sick here. We've got a leg. If I want to go out, I'll go out. Had a war. I took that attitude with it. And this corporal, he was livid, you see, about that. So the sergeant major, he was with an officer and that, and he says, right, well, come and get to bed, get to bed. And he says, if I was you, I'd get your pyjamas on. He says, and we didn't have pyjamas, but get undressed. And he said, come and see me in the morning, you see. So I went to see him in the morning. He said, what, you know, what was this all? I said, well, I'm browned off in here, you see. So I said, well, have you had any leave? I said, I haven't. He said, well, we can arrange for some fire. So I said, no, it doesn't matter. Doing. Then that was that. So it passed over. And then I heard that the battalion was moving. It was getting disbanded. And it was moving to Palestine from Singapore. And I thought, well, they're not leaving me in hospital here, you know, that I'm going with the battalion. I want to. So I said to the RSM, I said, can I get posted back to my battalion? He says, so what for? I said, well, they're moving out. They're going to do it. He said, no, they can't do that. So I said, well, I want to. So he said, oh, well, you can go and see the medical officer, you see, the one in charge of the hospital. So I went to see him, and he said, well, I can't see. He said that a few weeks before your plaster's going to come off. And I said, you won't be able to do anything, so you'll be no use to them. I said, I still want to go, you know, and, you know, with the unit, you see, and go and get the medical doings and the battalion to remove the thing when it's ready. So he said, well, look, you're determined, I can see that. You do it at your own risk. I said, well, okay then, you know. So I saw my company commander, Major Birch, you know. And I said to him, I said, can I come out, sir? I said, you know, I don't want to stay in this hospital. So he said, let's see what I can do for you. So he went and he came back. He said, yeah, they'll allow you to go out. So I joined the battalion, which was, I never thought it would be. So I had to go and pray there with a pot leg and you know, fall in and all that. And I had to do that. And anyhow, got on boat and it was an open cast, a plaster cast on my leg. And all my front toes were exposed to doing. And I got what they call foot raw, athlete's feet out there. And it was just red raw. So when I had to go sick with it, you see, and they put some penicillin on it, and they said, well, you know, we'll have you in hospital, you can't do it. So fortunate for me, I got into hospital on the boat. Lovely, nice bed, sheets, and a pair of pyjamas they gave me. So that's... So I went in, in the sick bay on the boat, and when it docked at Portside, and the battalion got off and all that, and they came to see me, and they said, right, well, we're sending you to a hospital at... is Malia on the Red Sea. They're sending you there. So right, when the battalion got off, I was left on, and the day after, I was taken by ambulance to the hospital in Malia, and I went in there, and I was in there for quite some time before they took the plaster off my leg. And so
where was the battalion meanwhile?
Well, evidently they were split up into Palestine. They went into different battalions, the 4th battalion and the 2nd battalion, and I've known them in the 5th battalion they were posted to. Now, I didn't know where I'd been posted to, could see from the doing. It was only some time after when I was in the hospital in Ismailia, and they took the plaster off my leg, and I started to hobble about again.
So you found out?
So they decided that they'd send me to a convalescent depot, you see, and they gave me a choice. They said you can either go to Alexandria or to in Palestine to
Sarafand.
It was a lovely place on the begin with and
Nathania.
To Nathania. You can go to Nathania. So I went in the convalescent depot in Nathania. And I had a room to myself in there, and I had a great time in there. Started playing tennis again there, and building up. And then, and it was at the time of when King David's Hotel was bombed there, and there was quite a number of lads who was actually in the hotel, within the convalescent depot. And we had a great time. And then came, and you'd had your time in the convalescent depot, and I was sent to the 4th Battalion. I joined the 4th Battalion in a signal platoon. And most of my friends from the 12th Battalion was in the 4th Battalion, signal platoon.
Where were they based?
And they was, I think it was Camp 21. Camp 21.
Where was that?
Don't really know, didn't go by names, and it was, the Camp 21 and whatever. They didn't go to... I didn't do any tour of duty there, that most of the battalion were doing round Tel Aviv and Jaffa, places like that. They're doing, and most of them was on the quayside. The ships that were coming in with Jewish immigrants on, they were being sent back home again. That, I think that was the what our role was out there. The paras was and any trouble that they were causing, the Ergenswahrlume, and...
Did you have any active service in Palestine?
Yes, with the... on a few occasions that... in Dathania was that you'd go into the cinema there in Dathania, and all of a sudden the lights would go up. And now you see all these guys in uniform, British uniform, Sten guns, be there, and they'd be picking officers out. And there was either Ergenswahrlume or the other, Sterngang, who was actually...
What do you mean, picking them out?
Well, they'd pick officers, British officers, who was in the cinema. You see, all the cinemas used to get full, from the convalescent and other doing round. And
you mean they'd
come in, and they would know. They used to take them out and off wherever, to wherever they wanted them to go to. The Ergenswahrlume would have hideouts in the mountains and places like that. And they'd come in with their jeeps, the same as we had, and take them off. Generally about three officers, something like that.
Did that ever happen when you were in?
It happened. It happened quite a number of times. That happened. I've seen them take them out. Didn't take any other rankers out. It was only officers they were looking for.
So they could tell by the military insignia.
Oh yeah, because when you've been in uniform, it's all in uniform there.
Was there no guard put on the hotel?
Well, not. There wasn't really. You see that. You see, the 5th Scottish Battalion. They was. I think they were doing a duty around this car park when it was opened up on them by either against Vailumi or the Stern Gang. Never told which were which, you know, but there was either these gangs that mostly they were ex-British troops.
And were these cinemas civilian cinemas or army cinemas?
Civilian.
So how many troops would be in the cinema?
Well, I should imagine there quite a lot.
How frightening did you find this?
Not at all, because they used to cheer. Oh, believe it or believe it not.
Who used to cheer?
The audience. Get them out. When they're dead, get out, you know. Get the cinema, get the film on. They didn't do anything else. That's all they did.
So what happened to these captives?
Well, they take them, you see. There'd be a few of them, you see, and they'd get the stun guns, you see. And before that, anything, it was only the officers that they used to take out.
Who used to be cheering? The civilians?
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody. The troops as well. You couldn't do anything. They had no weapon. See, I'd been there without a weapon.
And this was at Nathania?
Nathania.
How many times did this happen that you experienced?
Well, I couldn't say that. I mean to say, on the probably two or three occasions that it had happened, you know, twice this would happen. I saw it happen twice, anyhow.
Did the officers attempt to resist?
No.
Do you think they were?
I don't think for one moment they had any chance of resisting.
Do you think they were murdered?
Well, I don't know. Major Brett, I know, with one of the doings, I think he was taken in that, and he was taken to a forest and tied to a tree and whipped. And of course, he was left there, but I don't think they killed him, Major Brett. But I know that's what happened to him.
Did you know this Major Brett?
I didn't know him personally, no.
Was he in your battalion?
No, no.
Was he a para?
Para, yeah.
Any other memories from Palestine?
Best part of the time was playing football. We had a good football team, the Signal Platoon.
Did you go on anti-immigrant duties?
I didn't, no.
Did you go on raids on villages?
No.
How nervous were you in Palestine?
No one was nervous as that. I had nothing to worry about, you see. Only heard who these fellas were. They didn't say, that's the Stern Gang, that's Ergens Vailumi's lot that are doing that. We're just that they were illegal immigrants, you see, that was turning on. So that's, you know, that when I don't think we knew anything about illegal immigrants in going into Palestine. We knew there was these people coming in from different parts of the world, and there were different nationalities and all that, but we knew that there were Jews.
But you saw these gangs coming into the cinemas, you said?
Oh, yes. And there were immigrants, you see, and probably Stern was bantered about a bit, his name.
Didn't that make you nervous?
But not really. There was only one. They weren't like a para. I had no fear of them because I thought, well, they're not doing me any harm.
Just the officers?
Just the officers.
So were you happy in Palestine or not?
No, because I wanted to get home. I knew that my time would come, you know, for release. And I knew that I wouldn't belong in Palestine, because that would be don't know, every day, but be November-ish, October, November-ish.
46.
Yeah.
How do you feel now about having served in the paras in the Second World War and after?
Served?
How do you feel like it? How do you feel about it now?
Great. I'm glad it happened.
When you were in Singapore, were the parents of the girl you got friendly with Chinese or not?
Chinese.
Both of them?
Yeah. But she was Eurasian, you see, so that probably a mixed marriage. But they were, you see, they were white, more or less. Anglo-Eurasians, they used to be named. So Rosie was, to me, she was an Anglo-Eurasian, even though she had a Chinese father.